Hello, treaders, and welcome back to another episode of Tread Lightly. Today, we are actually going to cover a topic that was our very first episode ever, the 3-hour long run. And we're doing this again, one, to update things, but also we understand we may have had some audio issues early on, and we really think this is valuable information. So we want to make sure that we're putting it out there and you get everything.
Yes, like with many things, you learn as you go, and I think our audio is much, much better now, and our editing skills and everything than it was at the start. And this is just a question that I get all the time from athletes, so I think it's a really important one to answer.
100%. As always, though, we're going to do a listener question first. So we had a question come in from Pam. I would love to hear any bright and or reflective gear recommendations for this season with less sun.
Yeah, I think it's really great, like just that people are thinking about safety on the runs in the dark. So I'll like be the first to admit that I hate running in the dark with a passion and avoid it at all costs. But when I have to, the things I reach for are one of those 360 degree like Y vest singlets that gives reflectivity from all angles. I think that's really important, especially if you're running through like neighborhoods, you don't know if people are going to come up behind you, in front of you, to the side. So that's my go-to piece. And then I have a headlamp that gets pretty bright. It's like one of the new ones that has quite a lot of lumens to it. And that's actually pretty much my go-to if I run in the dark. And then I'm very selective about routes of where I just won't encounter many cars. And I recognize that's a privilege of where I live, but it's still something I take into account.
I love the dark in the summer. In the winter, when I think I'm going to fall on ice, I love it a lot less. So one of the things I started using this last year that I really like is the Nathan Hypernight Stealth Jacket. And so it's super lightweight. That means I can use it in like every season, and it pretty much looks like it's black until light hits it. And then the whole jacket is reflective. And so I really like that one because it feels like a piece that you can just wear anytime. And so you'll get a ton of use out of it. On the flip side of that is also just the super cheap, like Nathan neon yellow vest that you can pull over. It's a little thinner, so it's not the full construction vest that we see. It's more of kind of a singlet type feel. And so that's a super cheap option. I'm with you. I like the headlamp. I've never really been a fan of like holding a flashlight or the knuckle lights because the fact that my hand is moving means the light is moving, and that bugs me. A lot of people love that, and that works totally great for them, but my brain is like, why is there no consistency in where this light is?
Yeah, and I know knuckle lights have like updated, but back when I tried them, that just never got as bright as a headlamp, which means like people are less likely to see you, and you're less likely to see things. As like the headlamp I have almost feels like blinding at some points, which is great for visibility.
Yeah. I do keep a blinky light on my hydration pack too. So oftentimes on the back, because sometimes we don't think about our back for some reason as much. So even if you've got that headlamp, making sure you have something behind is a great, great reminder. All right, let's dive in. I'm excited.
Yes, I'm excited to go on. I feel like this is one of those things that I can just get really in depth and maybe a little too polemical on. But again, it's one of those things that's super nuanced. And I think what you'll find from our discussion here is that there's no right answer. There's a lot of individual factors that have to be considered with long run length.
Yes. So let's kind of start with this idea of why are people being told to only run for 3 hours and never go longer? I think that is where a lot of people sort of get confused because that recommendation is out there a lot. But it's sort of interesting if we start to kind of break down some of the data that a lot of the time that recommendation is coming from looking at people who are either really high volume runners or kind of elite level runners. So not just the Olympians that we see, but folks that are doing fast marathons. So not the middle of the pack and the back of the pack.
Oh yeah. Like the Hansen's Marathon Method, which is one of the famous ones for having a limited long run, or the Jack Daniels running formula, usually work best for people who are running like 3:15, 3 hour, sub 3 hour marathons, where they don't need to actually be out there that long for their long run, and they have the capacity within the week to handle quite high mileage for, like, say, a 5 hour marathoner. A 60 mile week would be extensive.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're not saying, listen, those plans are wrong. We're saying that you just have to figure out your body and what's going to work for you. So we want to talk about some of when you should use those limits and maybe why you actually need to have a run that's longer than 3 hours to really get you ready for race day.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. The Hansen's method works great for some people. You know, you see lots of runners thrive, but the reason there's so many training methodologies is because there's so many different runners with different needs. So let's dive into this background of the 3 hour long run rule. I've seen it most often discussed with reference to a study, and I naturally pulled up the study while I still had access to all my like graduate school journals and stuff. And the study was first off from 1982, and that's old, like not age-wise for humans, but in exercise science, and if you're like studying it in school, usually you're told to use articles unless they're a huge seminal article. They're no more than like 10 years old because the field is advancing so rapidly.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I just think about the number of things in the, you know, 20 years that I've been running that are so absolutely different. So I can only imagine now that's over 40 years and we just know a lot more. We've learned a lot more. And who is running marathons has changed, right? It started out, it was kind of selective and most people were a lot faster. Now it's opened up so that more of us can run and can enjoy it and are not finishing in a 3 hour time frame.
Yes, I often hear people complain that, oh, people are getting slower, marathons are slower. And it's like, it's not that the people participating in marathons are slower, it's that the median marathon time is changing because the sport is more inclusive and participation is widening and taking a larger demographic of athletes.
100%. Well, and we mentioned Jack Daniels at the beginning, and he is someone that has really shaped running. There are a lot of things that he has done that have been really beneficial, but it is important to look at the fact that he was really working with high level, you know, amateur to pro runners. And so even some of his recommendations now that we look at, he sort of said maybe a 2.5 hour long run was plenty, or not taking in any carbohydrates on runs. And I remember that for a little while, we would call them glycogen depletion runs to make them sound fancy. But now we just realize, no, if we absolutely want to optimize performance, carbohydrates and fueling on the run are a must.
They are a must. And that's where the field and the body of research and knowledge has really exploded in the past 5 to 10 years. Since even most editions of the Daniels running formula were published, is that we want high amounts of carbohydrates. You know, for a 3 hour long run, you'd be looking at like 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrates per hour. And we understand from the research, such as a 2020 study in nutrients, that high carbohydrate intake during long runs, because that study looked at a trail marathon, reduces muscle damage because your body isn't taking protein from your muscles to break down for energy via gluconeogenesis, and it speeds up your recovery. So that already is beginning to take care of some of the concerns around a long run longer than 2.5 to 3 hours, because the concern was muscle breakdown, recovery, impacting your next training week.
Are there any studies that are newer than that 1982 study that look at the long run?
Yeah, that's a great question. And first I'll note that that 1982 study was done on rats also, and like mitochondrial, like mitochondrial response and plateauing in rats when they were exercised for a very long time. you know, exercise science is never this perfect causative science where X always indicates Y. So instead, we look at statistics and correlations and make logical deductions from there. So there was a 2020 study, Fokima et alia. So it was out of the Netherlands, and they looked at a sample size of 441 marathoners, 70% male, average age of 41, average experience in the sport of 5 years of running, and an average marathon finish time of 4 hours and 17 minutes prior to the study. The aim of this study was to look at the relationship of marathon performance, injury, and longest long run. So like, how did your longest long run impact your performance, but how did it also impact your injury rate? Circling back to this concern of, is going too long an injury risk? So the p-value was less than 0.05. The analysis did remove any DNFs, which can complicate things, but it just is what it is. Like, they couldn't easily factor those in. And what's really interesting is they found that the longest long run and overall training volume contributed to overall finish time. So the longer you ran, the less decline you had in pace during the marathon, the faster you finished. And these are for pretty average recreational runners. And there was no associations with these training characteristics and injury. Instead, they hypothesized that running-related injuries were related to the progression of training volume, and that it could possibly be higher for people who weren't as experienced as these runners who had been running for 5+ years. But the runners who did long runs of 18 to 22 miles, 30 to 35 kilometers, had the best marathon performance with no statistically significant difference in running-related injury rate.
And I think injury is one of the big things that people will point to when saying you should never go over 3 hours. So let's look a little bit more at that. I work with a lot of athletes, or my whole team does really, that are, you know, finishing around that 5 hour mark. And so maybe a lot of these athletes are doing run walk, which is a different stimulus than running straight through at like a 7 minute pace, right? So your body is getting those little bit of breaks in between. Our breakdown is a little bit different as well. So it's not that you're not getting benefits if you stopped at 3 hours, but maybe that you're missing some bigger benefits if you went longer. Because say your 3 hour long run only gets you to 15 miles, and you still need to be able to cover another 11.2 miles on race day, that's mentally and physically a really big jump for a new runner. Whereas someone who is running that 3 hour marathon may be covering 20 miles in their 3 hour long run. So that's part of the difference, is, you know, what we're getting out of that time. So there are a lot of ways we can kind of work with that to ensure that we're not creating a big injury risk. We've talked about this before on here. Sometimes what I will have people do as we're building up their long run is, even when they're still at doing a 2 hour long run, when they finish it, I will have them spend some time just walking. 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it might be. So we've taken that intensity way down, but we're keeping you on your feet, and we're just sort of building up that feeling of time on feet, building up some endurance. So then as long runs get longer, we keep kind of doing that, and it makes it easier to push past that 3 hours without the concern that we're overtaxing or going to create an injury.
And I know I've said this in a recent episode, but I think that is such a valuable training tip for new marathoners, is to include some walking. Like, it really makes a difference in how your body breaks down when you incorporate those walk breaks. And the other thing, I know we've talked about this in previous episodes and you've had with your athletes, is having a gradual build into your first marathon. I know it seems so popular to start running and have a marathon as your first goal, but there's something to be said about taking maybe a year or two to build up to it so that it's not a shock to your body.
100%. I've said 100% a bunch this time, which just means I really agree with what she's saying. One other study that I thought was interesting was in the Journal of Psychology and Health, and it said running a long run of more than 3 hours can help to improve physical self-efficacy, so meaning that we have the confidence that we can run 26.2, because honestly, even when people do a 20-mile long run, the fear of needing to cover another 6 miles is almost always still there. And so we have a lot of conversations about that. And we've certainly talked about it here with peaking and tapering. But I personally would not do great with like a 15-mile or a 16-mile long run because I was capping it based on time. I want to know what my body is going to experience as those miles get longer. I want to know, what's my fueling like as I keep going on? So it's more of a chance to really practice and feel like you know what to expect come race day.
And that is like, that cannot be understated. I think the one thing that this 3 hour rule has is, in addition to focusing on faster runners, it takes such a limited view at looking at the processes that occur in these long runs. So I understand that the argument is that, you know, you're not getting, you have diminishing returns after that in terms of metabolism and bioenergetics. First off, diminishing returns don't mean absolutely no returns or detriments. They mean diminishing. But you're not just training your metabolic system to run long, you're stressing your musculoskeletal system for the specific demands of race day. You're training your nervous system. You're building mental strength and mindset. You're training your GI system so that, you know, you're not going to be surprised at mile 18 of the marathon when all of a sudden your gels sit super poorly. And you're testing out gear. Like, we want to make sure your running shoes feel comfortable for, you know, a decent amount of time on your feet if you're going to be out there for 5 hours on race day.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have athletes, like I said, that have, they are at that cutoff mark, 6.5 hours sometimes. And knowing that your feet are going to feel different at hour 4 than they did at hour 2 is huge. And I think that actually speaks to another study that we had found previously from the University of California, San Francisco, that showed running a long run of more than 3 hours can actually help reduce the risk of injury, which makes sense. That additional time allows you to build more strength, to work on your form, and to just work on all those different muscle groups. And we kind of forget that, but one of the things that the long run is teaching us is, as I fatigue, how do I sort of break down? Meaning, like, do I kind of start slumping over? Do I stop taking my gels because my stomach does sort of hurt? Does my left hip start hurting? Oh, maybe that's a sign that I need to do a little bit more hip and glute work. Or as I get tired, am I changing my gait? Unless we get to that long run point where you have enough fatigue, we're not going to know that. And then you're going to find it out on race day, which is not when I want to find it out.
No, it's really not. And especially, like, I just think so often for like a first time marathoner, you want to have as positive of an experience as possible. Like, a first marathon is tough and there's going to be moments in it where you feel like you're staring into the abyss, maybe. But you overall want it to be a positive experience, not this hugely negative experience.
Yes. So, question, do we have any data on how long the long run needs to be? So if we're saying, okay, it's fine if you go over 3 hours, well, what if I want to do 22 miles? Is that necessary? Do we have anything on that?
We actually have, I think, 3 studies on that, which, again, like, the more studies we can look at, the better idea it goes to. And what's interesting to me about all these studies is they use distance, not time, because a lot of people in exercise science think about specific demands. And when thinking about a marathon, they're thinking about covering 26.2 miles, not how long it's going to take you. So that study I referenced earlier, they found that the 18 to 22 mile range for these 4:17 marathoners, average 4:17, was the most beneficial. Over 22 miles was not statistically significant and impacting outcome, especially if your overall training volume was sufficient. That's 30 to 35 kilometers was kind of the sweet spot, and they don't recommend over 35 kilometers. Another study in a 2020 meta-analysis in the Journal of Science and Medicine and Sport found that it was the number of 20-mile long runs and the longest run that were correlated with faster marathon finish times. The p-value was 0.001, which means that this data was not occurring due to random chance. And this study included looking at four-hour marathoners, and it said roughly 20 miles is like the sweet spot based on that data for four-hour marathoners, long enough to prepare them, and they can repeat it multiple times in training, but they don't need to go over 20 miles before the race. There's no additional benefits. And I mean, a four-hour marathoner is probably taking like 3.5, maybe 4 hours to do 20 miles in training. And then there was a 2020 study that found no correlation between the longest long run and injury risk. The odds ratio of the longest long run, if it was under 25 kilometers or 15 and a half miles, an injury was 1.00, meaning no causal relationship found. A long run over 35 kilometers or over 22 miles and change had an odds ratio of 1.01, which was just the slightest correlation with injury. But again, that 25 to 30 kilometer range had an odds ratio of 0.75, not associated with injury risk. So it's actually, we're seeing in that one that too little volume can, like, it's not going to protect you from injury the way we thought. Sometimes going a little bit longer is actually a little bit more protective.
I think there are two really important things there. One, just because we're saying you can go over 3 hours doesn't mean you need to like excessively go over 3 hours or just go as long as you possibly can. That's not the goal. And a good reminder there that like a 4 hour runner, that's your race pace. So we anticipate that your slow, easy, long run, you may only cover 20 miles in 4 hours. So those paces should be pretty different. If you are a first-time marathon runner, your easy pace and race pace might be the same thing. And that is 100% normal and fine. So the big thing is really don't feel like you need to do more and more and more. Just stick to this slow and steady buildup progressively if you've been following your plan. The other piece to it is one of the reasons that people will say don't go over 3 hours is because of the amount of time it takes to recover. So your recovery is longer for every long run than it is for a short weekday run. But if you are staying on top of your fueling, your hydration, your sleep, that's all of that is going to help you recover appropriately and quickly so that you can continue into training doing the other things that you need to.
That's sort of a gauge I use when working with athletes and like calibrating their long run distance and how far we actually go in marathon training is if we do a run and they are having trouble recovering in a manner that impacts their runs in the upcoming week, that means it was too much for them. So we either back it off or we spend more time adapting. And if an athlete just recovers slower from long runs, that might impact how far they decide to go in training compared to an athlete who like is one of those people who just, you know, does 20 miles and recovers super quickly. And we all want to be them.
Yeah. It could also be someone who's like really well suited for like a 10-day training cycle. So that spaces your long run out a little bit more. So if you have a long enough time for your training and you're like, I know I just am not a fast recovery person, if you can space things out a little bit more that way, that might be an option for some people to consider. It does mean occasionally your long run is going to be on a Wednesday though. So you have to have a schedule that is accommodating for the fact that that means your long run is not always just going to fall on a Saturday.
Yeah. And going off that, I'm not saying this works for everyone, but I've done for some athletes who have work constraints where they can only run long on the weekend, but are slower marathoners or don't always like recover super quickly from the long run is like an alternating schedule where we do a longer long run 1 week and then the next week was a little bit shorter and then a longer long run the next week. There's just different ways you can be creative, I guess, about your programming, especially if you give yourself enough time to build up.
Yes. And I know we talked about this a little bit a couple of times here, but I think fueling is one of the big, big keys to making this doable. It's very interesting sometimes when we are kind of middle or back of the pack that we will sort of tell ourselves, oh, I'm going slower, so I must not need as many carbohydrates, or the fight I had on social media this week that just because you're a fat burner doesn't mean you don't need carbs. So that's an interesting one, because I do train at low heart rate, and that's one of the big things they love to talk about is, oh, you've become such a better fat burner. And it's true. I have actually had testing done, and I could see the shift where I am burning more fat even longer, but I am still utilizing carbohydrates, and I am more efficient. I'm able to run healthier and faster and recover faster when I am taking in carbohydrates during that run. So don't sort of play that game with yourself. Fuel well. It will make such a big difference in your whole training cycle.
It really does. Like, I feel like we're in the midst of this like great fueling revolution where it's just becoming more talked about. The science is really pushing it. We're seeing some cyclists taking like 120 grams of carbs per hour, which is too much for runners, but 60 to 90 grams of carbs, I guarantee, is a lot compared to like 10 years ago when we were like, I take a goo every 45 minutes because that's what the packet says. And I think we're going to see changes in training theory. I think we already are on the elite level because of these changes in fueling. And then also with long runs, like even if it's a low intensity, there's this concept in exercise science of like training load or TRIMP, where you think about intensity by time. And essentially when you're going out there for a really, really long time at a running intensity, the overall session becomes moderate. And that's where the literature is very directive that even if it's a low intensity, if it's over 90 minutes to 2 hours, it needs to be fueled well, because that time makes the intensity load higher.
That's a great reminder too, because we often talk about this 80-20 principle, and people don't always consider their long run as part of the 20%. But particularly when you're getting into 3 hours, 4 hours, like the longer you're out there, that is becoming a hard effort on your body because of cardiac drift and muscular fatigue. And so also just keeping that in mind for yourself, okay, if you've had to do a 4 hour long run and you have speed work on tap this week and your legs just aren't feeling it, it may be a better choice to not do the speed work and do an easy run instead, because we don't want to push your injury risk up. So you do need to kind of take that into account in your total load and your total volume.
Oh yeah. And I think we talked about this some in our episode on training tips for first-time marathoners. But sometimes this is a case where if you're training for your first marathon, you're in the 4+ hour range, and these long runs are going to take a toll on your body. Like sometimes there's just not much intensity in the week at all, as like just to let you adapt and recover from that and stack enough mileage as well.
If you have athletes who tend to be a little bit more injury prone that are in sort of the middle back of the pack, do you change anything around the long run? So do you say, okay, maybe 3 hours is what we limit you to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So usually I am thinking like I do want to make sure they're prepared. So what we'll do is maybe limit it at 18 miles, 17 to 18, depending. Sometimes for those scenarios, I do try to do almost like an ultra running approach, where instead of having one really long day, we have two longish days stacked to each other. Now, those still come with risk. It's not like that's, you know, 100% protective against injury or guaranteed that you're going to feel super fresh. But I do find that that approach can help. And then as counterintuitive as it sounds, upping weekday mileage really helps in that situation, because then you're getting the higher training volume. And if you're able to do an hour most days of the week, then 3.5 hours on the weekend feels like less of a shock to your system. What about you?
I think that last piece is really, really key. If your long runs are going to be taking you over 3 hours, You will not love to hear this, but you need to figure out how to get more mileage in during the week too. There used to be a rule that was something like your weekend long run shouldn't be more than 30% or something of your total volume for the week. I can't remember because I don't know. I create so many plans. Everyone's a little different, but I like the basic idea there because you need that consistency in building your system up. And I think if you're an injury prone runner, sometimes it's scary to add more, but we often need to figure out why are you an injury prone runner? Is it because we're skipping the strength work, folks? Is it because you're doing very little during the week and then going out and doing these really long runs, so your body isn't quite adapted? Is it because you're actually not fueling enough? That's a super common issue too. And so then you're getting injured. So if we can figure out that injury, and then I love that during the week, and 100% I agree. I've definitely done like the back-to-back weekends where maybe we're at some point 10 miles Saturday, 10 miles Sunday, and like playing with that kind of ratio. And again, it's not perfect, but it is different than trying to run 20 miles all at once in terms of the total load and maybe concerns around injury.
Yeah. And I know that's what like some elites like Camille Heron do. Now, granted, we don't want to extrapolate training theory from people like Camille down to recreational runners because she is a like once in a lifetime type runner. She is a genetic exception, and the training theory that works for her isn't guaranteed to work for other people because she is so gifted, so exceptional, and has done the trials of miles already, where she's done those big long runs and then she's been able to scale them back because her body still remembers. I feel like that's almost like a recurring message of this is just because it works for the top end runners doesn't mean it's going to work for a majority of runners. Sometimes it does.
Yeah, there are a lot of things we can learn from the elites and from the experiences and the years that they have put in, but also then we need to adapt it to, you know, the everyday person who is training with the full-time job, although some of the elites now are doing that, which is blowing my mind. but adapt it to needing to be on our feet longer and how that changes the experience that we're going to have.
And then one thing, like before we wrap up, that I really feel like is worth knowing is chances are if you're training for a marathon, you're not doing these super long runs every single weekend. Maybe it's only like once or twice before the race that you go over 3 hours or 15 miles, whatever it is. Like maybe you only do 1 to 2 18 to 20 milers. It's not like every single week is like that because that can get risky for some athletes.
Absolutely. Make sure you are following a plan. Even if you've got a free plan, like we love coaching, obviously, but even if you have a free plan, that's fine. It's an amazing place to start. It will progress you in a safe way instead of you kind of jumping or getting nervous and doing more than what is on the plan. Just do what's on the plan.
You know, what always surprises me is when you read reviews of the Hansen's plan, there'll be all these people who are like, and then I extended the long run to 18 to 20 miles. And so then my brain wonders, I'm like, does it work? Like if you're saying you followed it, but then you extended this part and then you had success, like does the long run cap actually work then as much as we think it does because people are changing it? But it all goes back to like, if you have a training plan, color with inside the lines.
That mental piece of the marathon is so huge. Like even for people who have followed their plan exactly, mentally knowing they've got another 10 miles is a lot for most of us to swallow. So, all right, runners, thanks for joining us again. If you haven't recently shared an episode or taken a second to rate us on wherever you're listening to podcasts, we would truly, truly appreciate it.
Yes. And as always, we love hearing from you. We love getting your listener questions. So please follow and reach out to us at Tread Lightly Running on Instagram. Thank you for listening.